What's good, everybody? Monday morning, NHL Fantasy on Ice. Hope you had a happy Easter Passover weekend. Pete Jensen, Rob Reese, James Harding, our trusted guest as always, here to break down the waiver wire. What's up, guys?
What's up, James? Welcome back to the show. Happy Monday.
Happy Monday, guys. Yeah, it was good to hear the silky, soothing voice of the goalie master the other day when he made his triumphant return. But now I'm back, and I'm here to save the day again.
Yeah, you've actually become probably our most frequent guest because Davey's been off the grid a little bit, but we'll get Davey back in the mix for sure. He hit his sledgehammer. I think it was a little low-hanging fruit, but he did hit it, so kudos to Davey for his first sledge victory of the season.
Well, he did hit that one, but he missed the Blues at big time plus money.
He missed
money.
The bigger one, yeah.
He's 1-1. Standings will go out today. He's 1-1 sledgehammer standings. And James, just based off of your volume of appearances, I mean, you are sliding into the Fantasy on Ice press release. God willing, if we have a show in 2022, I think we will. I think we'll be okay. But James, you're going to get the press release spot because you're on so much. So thanks for joining us as always. And let's kick it off. Robbie, where are we going? What do we got?
We're going to the waiver wire and we're going to the Boston Bruins, James, who you can talk about two players. First off, Krejci has kept this thing rolling. So faceoffs league or not, time to pick this guy up. And then alongside is Craig Smith now, right wing only. James, tell me a little bit about these guys.
Well, we know when we have known for a very long time what kind of a fantasy producer David Krejci is. I mean, he's been slotted in, you know, and it hasn't even, you know, been pencil. It's been Sharpie marker written in on that second line as the center behind Patrice Bergeron. And, you know, I mean, find me a guy who just more quietly produces, you know, above average to almost elite fantasy numbers than David Krejci. I mean, you know, his last 5 years, 54 points, 44 points, 73 points, and then 43 points in 61 games last year. So, you know, last year he easily would have hit probably about 55, almost 60 points, 23 points in 30 games this season. So he's probably going to be in the shortened season again, right around that 40 to 45 point mark. You know, he's one of those guys, I just don't understand and never really have why so many people underrate him as a fantasy asset. And when you look right now, he's only 28% rostered in Yahoo leagues. He's skating on the second line that features David Pastrnak now because they're starting to try and spread that scoring around a little bit. And he's second on the team among forwards in power play points with 11 right now. So I don't understand why so many people are down on David Krejci. 23 points. Yes, okay, he only has two goals on the season, but he's, you know, 28% rostered, and a guy down in Florida like Carter Verhaeghe, who, yes, 17 points, 16 assists on the season. So he's having a great year as well. 76% rostered. I think, you know, two guys like that should be a lot closer in comparison when you talk about the amount that they're rostered. And with Smith, I mean, we know what kind of a player he was back when he was with Nashville. He's starting to come on a little bit now. He's getting a real shot on that first line playing with Marchand and Bergeron. You know, he's a guy who's worth taking a flyer on, especially at this point in the season, if he has the chance to stick on that first line for the last, you know, 15, 20 games of the year.
Right. And you see the Bruins are playing some wacky games. Like, of course, they won 7-5. Nice bounce back by them over the weekend against the Penguins after losing to them a couple of days prior. They're still without Tuukka Rask, which is a concern. So maybe they play a little bit more up tempo and let the offense take over at different points when they're able to, when they can get that 5-on-5 shooting percentage up a little bit, which they did over the weekend. But yeah, like Craig Smith being up top with Bergeron and Marchand, and then the countrymen, right, with Pastrnak and Krejci, like that's always a wrinkle that they have been able to go back to. They're always so married to that top line, but when they spread that baby out, it's like they have enormous potential. And Krejci, yeah, so underrated every year. Even his best years, he's overlooked and underrated. But like the past few years, he's always out there on the waiver wire. So hopefully he's still out there in your league. And you could take advantage of David Krejci contract here, David Krejci, by the way. So a little bit more, you know, reason for his uptick in production here.
Do you think, Petey, that they'll keep Pastrnak on that second line? I mean, it's like, I know Boston does this, right, where they will break them up every so often, but they haven't been able to generate consistency all season with their depth scoring.
Yeah, I'll go on the record and say I think that the Boston Bruins have a better chance to win the Stanley Cup if they play Pastrnak on a separate line. You know they're still going to be together on power play one. They're going to do crazy damage with the man advantage. We know they're capable of that. We know time and time again they will deliver in those situations. Look at the playoffs past couple of years. I mean, the power play is always through the roof. But the even strength scoring, the secondary scoring, you solve that problem if you put David Pastrnak on the second line. He has great chemistry with David Krejci. And, you know, Krejci's out there with the little man bun. He's got his confidence up. It's pretty cool to see a resurgence here from Krejci and fantasy relevance as a result, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and the other thing that is interesting to point out, too, about them spreading the offense around is I think that Craig Smith has actually a really legitimate shot to stick on that line for the rest of the year. And I think he would be a very, very interesting asset on that line with that placement, because right now he's third on the team in shots on goal with 81 behind Bergeron and behind Pastrnak, and he's just slightly ahead of Brad Marchand. So really on that line right there, three of their top four shooters as far as, you know, total shots on goal this season are now playing on that first line with Marchand, Bergeron, and Smith. And so that tells me that there is a real untapped potential for goals coming from a guy like Craig Smith down the stretch.
Right. I think when I think of Craig Smith from Nashville, I think of, he usually didn't have a great center on his line. He was not usually on the line with Johansson when he was at the pinnacle of his career. And with Forsberg, he was usually on the second or third line. But the one thing about Craig Smith is he was always a high volume shooter. And when you see Craig Smith playing on that line and, you know, even for one game over the weekend and then his previous two games ago, I think he has 5 assists over his past 3 games, no goals. I mean, if he's racking up assists like that, imagine when the puck starts going in the net for Craig Smith, right? I mean, you could really see an explosion there fantasy-wise. So, yeah, that's what I think of when I think of Craig Smith. And if he's the volume shooter, he maybe gets some better looks because he's playing with better line mates, maybe becomes a finisher, and then the rest could be history. He could be one of the best second-half waiver wire pickups of the season.
So with fantasy playoffs coming up too, it's a cherry on the top that Boston has played 4 less games than each of Washington, Pittsburgh, and the New York Islanders. So you have that extra little schedule bonus too factored in. Now, James, I think the player with the most upside on your waiver wire piece today is Kevin Fiala. Pretty slow start to the season for the player, but Minnesota has entered that realm of being a safe team a la Boston too for the remainder of the season. So what do you like about Fiala to have a strong finish here?
He's starting to play with the confidence that we saw last season before the COVID shutdown. You know, he's finally, you know, last year we said he's finally starting to look like the player that everybody expected him to be for those seasons in Nashville before he was traded. You know, he had 54 points in 64 games last season. So he's very down this year, only 20 points, 10 goals, 10 assists in 33 games. But you know, he's still shooting a pretty high percentage, you know, 99 shots on the season. So he's still averaging 3 shots on goal this year. I think it's just there was a lot of lineup shuffling in Minnesota at the beginning of the season. And I think that they just struggled to find some chemistry with certain players in that lineup. And now you're starting to see them settle in. Now you're starting to see them, you know, believe that they're legit and that they're real. And I think that Fiala is just feeding off of that now that he is on his 5-game point streak. You know, he's got back-to-back games with a power play assist and 4 shots on goal and 1 hit. So, you know, definitely getting a lot of the different category coverage. And he's still only 52% rostered. So I think a guy like this getting hot right now down the stretch of the season is something that we really want to be paying attention to. Yes, their next 2 games are against the Colorado Avalanche, and they do have a handful of games against Colorado. They still have 5 games left against Colorado down the stretch, but they also have 7 games left against St. Louis down the stretch right now. So, you know, I would be definitely going out and taking a flyer on the guy like Kevin Fiala if he's going to start being this productive.
Right. And the Wild are going to have to beware here. I know they have a cushion in the standings, but if they're going to be getting the Blues that many times and the Blues, you know, are playing well against teams like Colorado and Vegas, but can't seem to win a game lately, they're going to get the A++ effort from the Blues almost every time, because they're going to be desperate for points to hold off teams like the Coyotes and the Sharks that are surging right now in the West. For Fiala, I just think back to last year. Like, he was the single best breakout player of the second half of the season before the pause, that stretch that James referred to. He was up there in shots on goal leaders in the league, up there in points leaders, even up there with like Zibanejad with how hot he was. The issue this year was like, He's had to take a back seat, let's be honest, behind Kaprizov, right? This is Kaprizov's team now. It's not Kevin Fiala's team. Kevin Fiala's on the second line with some shaky line mates. Like, you know, I know Eriksson Ek up top now, but you see him down there with like Nick Bonino and Bukestad and players like that. I mean, they're not going to get the best out of your fantasy value. So it's up to the player to be the individual finisher that we know he can be. So, yeah, for Kevin Fiala, he was in the conversation with like Patrick Laine as recently as last week before the point streak. We were saying, you know, we know the guy's ceiling, but is it time to start dropping players like this of that ilk? And, you know, he's taken the bull by the horns and turned his season around. Laine has not. And that's why if this Monday morning, you're probably hanging on to Fiala and glad that you did. And you're probably dropping and parting ways with Patrick Laine and picking up anybody who's in the top six for a semi-competitive team out there, sadly. That's what it's come to at this point in the season.
And for Fiala, I think the new wrinkle on their top power play with Bonino, Rask, and Spurgeon kind of being the point guys, just throwing the puck around so that one of Kaprizov or Fiala can finish, is what he needed. I mean, he had 18 power play points in just 64 games last season. He only has 5 this season. So I think that's going to be the biggest second half thing for him here to get you over the top in your fantasy playoffs, is that power play production. And as you alluded to, James, all those games against St. Louis, you kind of made it sound like those were favorable games. They are now. I mean, look at what Arizona's been doing. They cleaned up Jacob Chychrun hat trick last night. I mean, now that team looks poised. And Petey, as you mentioned, the Sharks are right there too, on fire. So do you think, James, that there's some legitimate guys on those other teams in the West that can, you know, maybe make some dividends for you in fantasy?
Yeah, I think that there definitely could be. And it's also going to be really interesting in the next, you know, week, actually, now that we're getting down to it, what's going to happen by the trade deadline. There's some guys I'm going to be interested to see if a team like Minnesota is going to be in, you know, on any centers to kind of try and shore up that depth down the middle. I think a guy like Ryan Getzlaf would be an absolute perfect get for them to try and make a run. And I think that he would slot into that first or second line center and really just solidify them down the middle. I think that they need center depth. And I think that they know that in order to take them to that next, that next step up. But there are definitely a lot of guys in that, you know, out West that could provide some depth there. I mean, Nick Schmaltz from Arizona is a guy who we've talked about in the past, but is under 20%. Rostered right now, who has a multi-game point streak going on. One of my favorite names in the NHL right now, Rudolph Balcers from San Jose, is one of those guys playing in their top six that you can take a flyer on. So, you know, there definitely is value on some of these teams out West, on these lower ownership guys this late in the season. You have to, you know, have that streaming spot or two on your roster and just be willing to pull the trigger on one of these guys to see if they can go on a heater for you.
Sure. The sneaky guys on the Sharks are actually becoming really attractive. You know who all their staples are in the lineup by now, and a lot of them are already rostered. Even Martin Jones on this Monday morning, you're not going to find Martin Jones on the waiver wire very often unless you're in a shallow league or something like that. And then you don't even know if you want to pick him up, because it's probably just for the next 5 games or so with some favorable opponents, you're going to see some immense value from Martin Jones. And then when you go back to playing the juggernauts, you're going to see some bad performances like we've come to know over the years, of course, and some regression. But yeah, Sharks have won 4 in a row, 6 out of 8. They are done with the sweep, get swept. Now they've swept 2 teams in a row, in the Wild and the Kings. So I think we could start taking them for real a little bit here in the West for that fourth spot.
We'll get into the fantasy players in a second. 6 out of 8. We played this game with the Rangers. I'm going to play it real quick with you guys. They're what? 3 points behind Arizona right now, tied with the St. Louis Blues, 38 points in that division. Who's making that last playoff spot? Are the Sharks really going to make the playoffs? Because I'm not buying into the Sharks making the playoffs. I'm not doing it. I don't believe that they're going to be able to make the playoffs. It's a nice little run they're putting together, but I just don't see it happening. Robbie, start with you. Are they really a playoff team? Or are they just having a little nice hot streak that's going to fade away and wither away, just like Martin Jones has done his entire, last few years or so?
They'll wither away. It's remarkable, though, that they are in this position to even have this conversation. I think the San Jose Sharks deserve a lot of credit for that. Martin Jones specifically deserves a boatload of credit in fantasy, outside of fantasy, the whole shebang. The Arizona Coyotes are the team to me that deserves to be in. The reason why is they've been that team all season that's been right around that mark. It's not like LA that was hot earlier and then trailed off. It's not like St. Louis who can't win a game at home and Jordan Binnington has been a disaster after signing the new contract. It's that team in Arizona with a lot of sneaky guys in fantasy, Jacob Chychrun on the back end, Oliver Ekman-Larsson playing a lot better than he used to. That's the storyline to me. And Aiden Hill stepping in and playing lights out as well is another boast of confidence for that team. So if I'm taking one right now, I'm going Arizona. I expect them to be pretty even keeled the rest of the way and slide in there at number 4.
I think that the Blues are the best team still out of them. So, like, I would still put my finger on the Blues and say I think that they'll put it together, even if they have to eke out some tough games against the best teams in that division, like Minnesota, like Vegas, like Colorado. I think they'll ultimately do that. That said, yes, some of the guys I was referring to with the Sharks, like James mentioned, Balcers, the forward plays with Meyer and Hurdle, really good spot and good production this season. They're the couple of young defensemen. I mean, it's not just Burns and Carlson anymore. It's Mario Ferraro, 22 years old, you know, bringing the hits, bringing the block shots, you know, a very sneaky young player in multi-category fantasy leagues. And then there's this Nikolai Konejev, who plays with Erik Karlsson, I think has points in 3 straight games. Just sneaky rookie defensemen. There aren't that many rookie defensemen out there that are productive in fantasy. So keep tabs on him. And then, but for the Sharks, I do think because they have the talent, because I think they have more talent than the Coyotes do, I would say that. And I think that they have that renewed energy where they got through the obstacle of early in the season when they were on the road and everything was working against them. I do think that the Sharks have a better chance to make the playoffs than the Coyotes do because of talent. And I would just, as simple as that, I would say that they have a considerable amount of talent more than the Coyotes do. So it'll be Martin Jones or bust, though. Martin Jones, even when the Sharks were struggling, he was standing on his head in a lot of those games with 35, 40 plus save games. So you never thought it would be on Martin Jones' shoulders like this with his recent struggles in other seasons. But hats off to him and getting the team back on track.
Yeah, from a talent perspective, it would be the Blues, but I think that it's going to be one of Arizona or the Sharks. I would love to see Arizona. I think that they're going to find a way to do it and get it done. They just seem like they're playing with a lot of confidence right now, and I just haven't seen St. Louis put it together, you know, consistently enough. The interesting thing is really it's going to come down to how they play against everybody else, because St. Louis and San Jose don't play at all again for the rest of the season. So, you know, it's going to be where they can find the points elsewhere. But if I had to pick one of the teams right now, based off of how I see them all playing, I agree. I just don't know if Martin Jones can keep the streak that he's on going right now, even though he is playing, you know, out of his mind and he's, you know, standing on his head every night. I mean, 6-1-1 with a 1.96 goals against and a 940 save percentage in his last 8 games is nothing, you know, to you know, shy away from. But I just, you know, when you look at that multiplied out over, you know, the rest of his season, you know, he has not really performed very well. And those numbers right there have only brought him down to a 3.03 goals against average and brought him up to a 905 save percentage on the year. So he has an unbelievable run like that, and his peripherals are still that bad. You have to expect a regression again at some point. So if I had to pick one team, it would be Arizona.
I think the good thing, though, for San Jose is it's kind of making me believe that they are closer to rebuilding on the fly than initially I thought possible. It didn't look like that was going to be a reality heading into the season. And now if they keep this up and even just miss by a few points, Petey, I think it's a real good sign for San Jose and that franchise that, you know, just with another offensive piece or two acquired over the summer, kind of come out unscathed from the expansion draft, maybe a young draft pick comes in there too, and they look like they can compete again next season.
Yeah, and the kid Balser is it's funny because they got fleeced in that Erik Karlsson trade, right? Not getting the number one pick that one year, but they actually traded Balser to the Senators, and then he got waived, and they picked him back up because they still liked him. So they kind of salvaged that trade a little bit. Now he's playing in the top six. And yeah, like you said, Robbie, if it was the same group of guys kind of for a last hurrah and like Marlowe's still there, it's just not – you know, it's not doing anything for you long term. But if you can integrate some young players like Leonard and the other guys that I mentioned, and, you know, kind of like a second wind for the elder statesman, and then also kind of move along the younger talent on the team, which was absent last year. They didn't have any good young talent. So that's the only encouraging thing. Like, if they're going into win now mode and they're going to be stubborn, it's just something that they have to do. That's an absolute must. You got to give the young kids a big role if you're going to go that route, and then kind of parlay it into next season and hopefully not have to completely tear it down for their sake.
Before we get ahead to the slate tonight, because I do think that the St. Louis game against the Vegas Golden Knights will decide if the Blues can get this thing going, get out of the cellar here, James. But let's talk about Gustav Forsling on the waiver wire for the Florida Panthers. This is a guy I'm trying to pick up right now in a league that I'm sliding a little bit from third to fourth place. I need a guy that can carry me the next 2 weeks here into the playoffs. Do you think Forsling has a staying power with Aaron Ekblad out of the lineup?
100% I do. He's skating in Ekblad's spot on that top line. It's actually a pretty interesting pairing on that top pair with him and Mackenzie Weegar down there. You know, a four-game point streak, scored again last night, scored his third goal of the season. And you know, since the game that Ekblad has gone out, every game except for one, he's played over 21 minutes. Last night, played almost 24 minutes. He's got a 25-minute game against Dallas in his last handful. So they're giving it to him. You know, they're throwing him out there. And let's not forget, too, you know, they picked him up this past season from Chicago. And so he skated 100 games in his career with Chicago under Joel Quenneville, you know, just about 100 games under Joel Quenneville. So, you know, Coach Q knows this player. He knows what he can get out of him. He knows what he can expect out of him. And he's a guy who knows Quenneville's system. You know, so I don't foresee anything right now that's telling me that Quenneville doesn't have a 100% trust in this guy to go out and execute his system the way that he wants to. And they wouldn't be putting him there if they didn't feel like he could give, you know, adequate production compared to what they were getting out of Aaron Ekblad. You know, they may still be checking in on the rental market for free agent defensemen right now and may not love what they see. And now, you know, with Forsling stepping up and playing as good as he is, he may be giving them pause about actually needing to go out and get a guy who could be a top four defenseman and maybe just acquire a guy who could be that, you know, sixth or seventh depth defenseman that they need if they intend to make some kind of a deep playoff run.
This is turning into a bit of a breakout for this player in terms of other categories as well. I see over his past five games, so that correlates with the Ekblad injury, he's plus 10 in that span. So, and then he's got a bunch of shots on goal as well. He's got 10 shots in that five game span as well. So this is turning into, at a very scarce position, a must add player on defense. And you know, Uyghur's keeping it up too. Give him credit. He's coming into his own. He's showing he's not just the product of Ekblad. I think I was a little mistaken about that when we were debating him and Erik Karlsson a few shows ago. I'd still go Karlsson, but I mean, this guy's holding his own. He's not a fluke. And the Florida Panthers are not a fluke either. They win almost every night, man, right? They're at the top of the NHL standings right now. I mean, Tampa Bay's been a little shaky lately, honestly. They're losing games. Every time McElhinney's in net, they lose games. If they drop too many games, the Florida Panthers could win that division. And if they're matched up against the fourth seed. Maybe they could actually win a playoff series. I don't see them winning one head-to-head against Carolina or Tampa by any stretch, but if they play one of those other fringe teams in the first round, move on to the second round and take your chances against one of the juggernauts.
I guess my concern here for picking a guy like Forsling up is that, as described in the program last week, I said, look, Florida's not going to fall off just yet because they have four games in a row, two against Detroit, two against Columbus, and now, James, they're going to head out on a six-game road trip, two against Carolina, two against Dallas, two against Tampa Bay. They could lose six straight, and then we're not talking about the Florida Panthers as much anymore, and we're talking about the Dallas Stars or one of these four teams in the division. So I guess that would be my air of caution, you know, before we get too high on a certain team, that reality is going to set in pretty quickly.
Well, I mean, for sure, that's always the risk that you, you know, get this late in the season, you start getting tight games against really good teams. But I think if push comes to shove, you need to throw a guy like this in your lineup and see. I mean, the production level that he's giving you right now, you're almost guaranteeing when you stick this guy in your lineup at the moment that he's going to give you, you know, 20 to 25 minutes a night. He is seeing power play time, running the point on their second power play unit. So, you know, there is a lot of underlying value there. And let's not also overlook the fact, like Pete said, right now he's giving you plus minus, but he's also giving you, you know, some other peripherals in that five game span. He has seven blocked shots. So, you know, in categories where, or in leagues where, you know, blocked shots are a category, he's giving you, you know, some production there. He's already tied his career high with three goals. He's well on his way to breaking his career high of 10 assists. So, you know, he was never really an offensive, looked at as an offensive player. But I think that this year, you know, down the stretch of the season, he could chip in like another 6 to 8 points over the next couple of weeks. And that could be the difference, you know, along with him getting his shots on goal numbers up, keeping a solid plus minus and chipping in, you know, blocks and hits. You have to take a flyer on a player like this right now. You know, how often does a top two defenseman on a team leading their division in points this late in the season, you know, become available on your fantasy waiver wire? And especially a guy who's on, you know, like a 4 or 5 game point streak. It's one of those guys you just need to tap into right now, even just on a stream, and see what you can get out of it.
Right. The Florida Panthers depth is definitely showing its worth here. I think even for Alexander Wenberg, who's on the second line with Jonathan Huberdeau for most of the season, we haven't seen a ton of fantasy production from him, some little spurts here and there, but we saw a little outburst over the weekend from that player with a hat trick. So like Wenberg, I think, is going to join our top 200 rankings this week. Forsling might join it. Drieger got a win the other day. Bobrovsky's playing well. So the Panthers are actually a pretty deep fantasy team right now, and they're near the top of Robbie's power rankings for sure. Robbie, I think you bring up a good point about the schedule. This year, fantasy-wise, I have to be honest, I have not looked at home-road splits as much as I usually do. I've looked at other things like season series and things like that because it's so much more telling. But now with fans trickling into the buildings, you know, I think that it needs to be taken, the schedule and the home road splits need to be taken into account a little bit more. Like the schedule is favorable for the Sharks the next five games. Road trips we mentioned for the Florida Panthers coming up, also the Coyotes. It's going to be a make or break road trip for them. Take these things into account before getting too high or too low on any team out there in fantasy, I would say.
Well, and it's like Washington's a good example of this because they won all eight games against the Devils. And I'm like, I'll go to the well any night for an Orlov stream or a Dylan stream whenever they play that one opponent. But now that's over. So I'm not streaming those guys for the rest of the season, James, just on the opponent schedule. And I think the home road splits is a good point, too, because you're right. Like in the beginning of the season, I wasn't even looking at that, really, unless there was like a good home dog for betting odds. But yeah, I think that is going to be a storyline the last couple weeks here. I mean, I think, James, too, we're going to see it in the Central Division for that fourth slot, you know, whether it's going to be Nashville, who's played pretty well, 8-2-0 in their past 10. Chicago, they're 3-7-0, you know, on the opposite end of the spectrum, but they're still kicking around too. Do you have a pulse there, James, if Nashville can keep this thing up?
I mean, Nashville has been always that team that we think is going to offensively break out, and then they just, you know, never do. I don't trust a lot of their forwards. You know, Ely Tolvanen obviously is the guy that we keep bringing up, you know, week after week right now, and he is still staying productive. You know, if you have the opportunity to go out and grab a player like him, he's only 39% rostered in Yahoo leagues with 11 power play points out of his 19 points so far this season. You know, so you can go out and grab him. But a guy, you know, Victor Arvidsson has been banged up a little bit lately. Forsberg, as good as he is, he's been banged up lately. So, you know, they don't have a ton of appeal and a ton of fantasy depth. I'm not sure. I mean, maybe because they're playing better right now, a guy like Michael Granlund, you know, isn't going to get traded when a lot of people expected him to be moved at the deadline. I think had they fallen out of playoff contention, you know, Pekarinen might have been a name that they move. And I don't know. I mean, they still could move on from Pekarinen if a team like Colorado called up and offered them, you know, a good enough, you know, trade package for him as to, you know, to slot in as like their backup, because Yusei Saros has really taken control of that net right now. Rene is only, I think, 3 starts in the last about two and a half weeks. So, yeah, I think Nashville is a legit contender for that fourth slot in that division. I think it's going to come down to them and Dallas right now. But after that, I mean, the top three in that division are pretty much set. And I would be surprised if one of, you know, Carolina, Tampa Bay, or Florida didn't come out of that final four.
There are a couple of hidden gems. One that me and Robbie added to the top 200 tail end of last week. Luke Kunin came over from the Wild last offseason, and he's putting together a nice little stretch here. Scored another goal over the weekend, has points in 4 of his past 5 games since, I guess, coming back from an injury. 5 points in the span, plus 5 in the span. He's had 3 shots on goal in 4 of those 5 games, and he covers hits as well. So, like, that's a player center right wing eligible, only 2% owned, hidden gem alert, second line with Granlund, with Cali Yarncroc, who's had, you know, some big fantasy performances. And that's the reason that Nashville has been able to survive Philip Forsberg's absence lately. They're playing really well. Forsberg goes down, they're keeping it up. They lost the winning streak, but then they bounced back. It's because of those no-name secondary scorers. That's how they're able to put together a stretch like this. Good goaltending, the usual solid defense, and a second line that is actually, you know, producing for you. Not even once every 2 games, but, you know, 4 out of every 5 games the past couple of weeks. So that's been a huge storyline for them. That's going to have to continue if they're going to hope to fend off a team like Dallas or even one of those other teams in the Central.
I would stream both Kunin and Yarncroc right now, James, but I think it's like patching up holes, you know, on a dam. I mean, you can only get away with this so long before the thing bursts open. And Nashville,
yeah.
I think this is the worst thing to happen to this team is to be in the hunt right now, because they need to just rebuild a little bit, to retool a little bit, James. And like, I'll stream these guys because they're competitive, but I just don't think this is a contending team. And as bad as Dallas has been, as pedestrian they've been at home and on the road all season, they're still in the thick of things with games in hand.
Yeah, if I'm you know, betting on this right now, I would put money more on Dallas to make the playoffs. And I know that we've been up and down on Dallas, and they have made up a lot of ground as of late, even though they are only 4-3-3 in their last 10 games. You look at Chicago, who has fallen off, like you said, 3-7. Nashville, you know, 8-2 in their last 10. But really, you know, how much can they keep it up? I mean, they're just over 500 at home on the season, and they're just under 500 on the road this season. So, you know, I think that one of these teams, you know, one of these other teams is going to get hot. And, you know, I don't see it with Chicago, but I can absolutely see it with Dallas. And again, they're separated by 5 points right now, and Dallas has 3 games in hand. So if I was a betting guy right now, I would put money on Dallas to make the playoffs. And also because Dallas is, you know, plus 3 goal differential, Nashville minus 14, Chicago minus 13. So I'm going to go with the team that consistently is scoring more than they're allowing.
And for Nashville, one of the concerns for sure is, like, we compared them earlier in the year with the Sharks, like, to two teams that probably should tear it down for the good of the franchise. But Like the Sharks have two strong lines. They got one with Meyer and Hurdle and the other with Couture and Kane. They're paying big money for Burns and Carlson and Martin Jones. The Predators don't have that much talent. So like even I think both of those teams, if they were to make the playoffs, are not doing any damage this year. I don't think there's any chance either of them is springing an upset over like the top team in either respective division. But I do think that the Sharks maybe have more of a reason to be stubborn. And, you know, they're married to those guys. They have big contracts. They need them to stay productive, and they're surrounding them with young players. For Nashville, I mean, you look more at the talent around the league, right? Seth Jones, Kevin Fiala, Craig Smith, three guys we mention frequently, you know, or at least lately on these shows, you know, they're thriving for other teams out there. So Nashville's kind of in the, yeah. Oh yeah. That's a great one. I mean, he's one of the breakout defensemen of the season this year. So yeah, I mean, for Nashville, I look at all the mistakes and guys around the league that are, you know, producing for other teams. And maybe that's even more of a reason to kind of reset for that team.
And for Dallas, it's all about Jason Robertson right now, James, who, I mean, if this guy's available in your league, I would say must add, drop whoever you can drop. You know, I would even, yeah. I would even maybe look at a Tyler Toffoli now as a guy that I would maybe cut the cord with for Jason Robertson. I mean, Robertson, no one's talking about him. He's got 16 points, I think, in his last 17 games, or I think that was a stretch in March at least. I mean, he ripped it up in the OHL, 23 goals in 24 games one season, which is ridiculous. USA World Junior, 7 points in 7 games. Now for Dallas, absolute breakout candidate on a team that really was weak offensively without Seguin coming into the season. And this is a guy, James, I think that is going to be the guy that inflates their +3 goal total differential to, you know, a +10, +15 if he keeps this thing up.
Yeah, he's one of those guys you have to go out and add right now if he's available. And you know, his ownership percentage has been just shooting up over the last few weeks. But still, for a guy who is, you know, second, I think, in rookie scoring at both overall and at even strength scoring behind Kirill Kaprizov, you look at his March numbers, 16 points, 48 shots on goal in 17 games. And, you know, you look at the fact that he is skating firmly on that top line with Joe Pavelski, whoever is centering that top line on the nights when Roope Hintz, you know, is not playing, you know, whether it's been, you know, Jason Dickinson or, you know, they've been shifting that lineup around a lot. So, but Robertson and Pavelski have consistently been on that top line. And so I think that you have to go out and get a guy who's got this kind of talent, this kind of exposure, and this kind of production right now, because he is absolutely going to be, you know, a dynamite pickup for the remainder of the season, especially over the next week or so when they have games, you know, two games this week against Chicago and then a game at the end of the week against Nashville. They do have a game against Florida mixed in there, but, you know, I think that for a player like this, the two Chicago games and the Nashville game are favorable enough matchups where I'm going out and I'm picking them up.
I think I want to just, you know, touch base about the futures for the Calder Trophy. I mean, Kaprizov is likely to win the award. I think he has a good cushion, but if Robertson is heating up like this, I know Sorokin's playing well for the Islanders. He's had a nice winning streak and, you know, more wins than not for the past 2 months of the season since he's been starting to play more. You know, there are some other guys out there, even like Shesterkin, like off the radar. I know the Rangers lost to the Sabres, but I mean, he's putting together a really nice season and still rookie eligible. Do you guys see anybody, whether it's a goalie or maybe Robertson, catching Kaprizov and winning the award? Is there any appeal futures-wise to any of these guys?
James, what do you think? I said last week on the program, there's no way, because Kaprizov's hot start. Like, I just – Robertson would have to go on a tear. Like, he would have to score every night, I think, the rest of the way. Sorokin, as much as I like him, Petey, you know that, like – He would have to stand on his head and be, you know, I mean, Dominic Hasek, Patrick Waugh hybrid to win this award. Shesterkin would have to win out. There's no way.
I agree with Rob that Kirill is going to win this going away. And we had my good pal, Bill Guerin, on with Millard. Mm-hmm. Will be posted Wednesday, I think, of this week. And we asked him about Kirill, and he said, hands down, He is the Calder winner. Doesn't even matter what happens the rest of the way. Uh-huh. I know it's his guy. I mean, I know he's biased, but I think what Rob says is true. I mean, you're telling me Robertson is going to somehow overtake Kirill the Thrill at this point? It's not happening. So, what? James, what do you think?
Yeah, I would say that the money is still on Kaprizov to win, but there are a lot of, you know, outside of Robertson, I mean, the goaltending alone, you know, would have to be, I would rather put money on like who I think is going to finish higher out of the goaltenders. I mean, you have Vanacek, you have Lankinen, Kakinen, Shesterkin, Sorokin, Nedeljkovic, Ottinger. I mean, like you have these unbelievable rookie performances in goal coming up, you know, coming out of this season. You know, all of these guys really just definitely worthy of getting, you know, votes and consideration for it. It's unbelievable how year after year we just see these rookies coming in and how deep the rookie classes have been the last handful of years. But I think right now it's going to be Kaprizov unless somebody goes on a tear over the last month and just does something unbelievably ridiculous to take him over.
I think maybe the only wrinkle that could boost Robertson even further is maybe if like Sagan came back and they played together and he even took his performance to another level, but that could be a pipe dream at this point. We don't know, you know, when he would be coming back. And then the goalie wise, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of those we've seen this year, other than Lankinen, they've all been in timeshares, right? Vanacek's role has diminished when Sammy came back. Kakinen's role has diminished when Talbot came back. You know, as good as Sorokin has been this year, he's been the 1B to Varlamov's 1A. And Shesterkin is the 1A to Georgiev. But, you know, he hasn't been like crazy in the wins column so far and, you know, still trading starts here and there. So, yeah, that's one thing working against the goalies for the Calder Trophy ultimate victory. It's probably more likely to go to a forward, whether it's Kaprizov or Robertson, if he could keep it up.
And I'm almost more impressed about what Vanacek has done over a guy like Sorokin, because you're throwing this guy into the fire. Essentially, the Caps don't play third periods. They play 40 minutes a game, every single game of the season. And Vanacek has played tons, absolute tons, to have a 907 save percentage and as many wins as he had is remarkable, James. So nice that you brought his name into the mix. I do want to throw out two deep waiver wire gems here if you are in a deeper league. The first is Casey Mittelstadt, 3-game point streak on James's list. You can read that on nhl.com/fantasy. He has the draft pedigree to keep this thing up. Obviously, it's on a team like Buffalo, so he's going to be available in many leagues, but could pay some dividends for you. And then secondly, Eric Staal is supposed to be making his debut for the Montreal Canadiens. They're pretty deep now, you know, three centers abreast there. So that, you know, that could be one too that does something for you. Again, don't get too excited. It's the Habs in fantasy, but, you know, I think that gives them some nice steps. So I would take a flyer on a guy like that if you're in a deep league.
And how about Peter Mrazek over the weekend? He came back on Sunday, got a shutout, now has shutouts in three of his five games, three of his four decisions. So he's up there with crazy historic shutout paces of all time after this start. And, you know, I think that like for Nedeljkovic, like it kind of like hurts his appeal a little bit for the rest of the season. I still think he's going to be valuable. I still think he's worth keeping, but we'll see what happens with Reimer. We touched on a previous show, but I think it's even more heightened now after Mrazek came back, delivered against the competitive team in Dallas, shut out Robertson, shut out Dallas. So that team can score. So that was really impressive over the weekend, Sunday night. Just something that makes you think a little bit differently, I think, about Carolina heading into the trade deadline.
Can we get a couple picks on the board here? Is there anything else we need to touch on? You know, I think Petey gave some hidden gems. We're all over everything. You guys are all over it like usual. A couple picks. We're going to have a national championship pick as well. Of course, we got Gonzaga Baylor. And then James is going to give a couple Masters picks because golf is his thing. But where are we starting with the hockey? Robbie, is the finger is up with confidence on a Monday. Yeah. I like it. What do you got?
Confidence. I'm going back to the sledge. Did the Friday. I joined Davey with the low hanging fruit. I admit it was. That's a good call out, Petey. I'll take that. But, you know, it adds to the record. You got to pad the stats sometimes. I'm taking the Boston Bruins tonight against the Philadelphia Flyers. Now, the line on this one isn't that bad. It's not that bad for Boston. So you still get some value there. Love the secondary scoring, as we alluded to. And Philadelphia, you know, give them some credit for hanging around the past few games. They've definitely like ratcheted up their play. They're playing a little tighter. Carter Hart looked pretty good. So I like to see that for Philly, but I think Boston single-handedly blows the doors off.
Okay. Well, that's a minus 165, minus 170 sledge. And listen, there's no rules to the sledge. You know, Petey doesn't really give out a lot of big favorites, but that's on him. I mean, if a sledge is a sledge is a sledge is a sledge, it doesn't matter to me. So I like Boston tonight too. I think they're rolling right now, and boy, the Flyers, as we know,
we'll throw them into your March Madness pick, Bob. You know,
maybe a little parlay.
Sprinkle it in.
I don't even know where I'm going tonight, but I feel like after Saturday, I have to take Gonzaga to win. I don't know if they're going to cover the 5 points or whatever. Baylor's a real hell of a team, real good team. So, yeah, that's not a bad parlay. Let's go. We're going to take Few, and we're going to take Boston. We're going to take Jalen Suggs. We're going to hopefully Gonzaga raises the banner for the first time, wins the tournament for the first time, and we'll take Boston. Why not? James, what do you got?
You know what? I will join the fray, and I too will bring a sledgehammer to the party tonight. And it's going to be an underdog sledgehammer as well. I'm going to take the Edmonton Oilers at plus 105 against the Montreal Canadiens, because I do not understand how the Oilers are an underdog against the Canadiens tonight. So I will sledgehammer the Oilers tonight at plus 105 against the Canadiens. I will also take Gonzaga to win the national championship. And then as soon as they do, I will take Mark Few to be named the head coach of the North Carolina Tar Heels.
Ooh, there's no way Few's going to leave Gonzaga. I mean, I guess maybe you're right. Maybe you're right, James. I hadn't thought about that. Here's the thing, though. Carolina likes to stay in the family, James. They don't like to go outside the family. So I find it hard to believe that Carolina, all of a sudden, for the first time ever in their history, is going to go outside the Carolina family and bring in Few. So I know this is a hockey podcast. We can go on about this after hours, me and you, James. So let's keep it with the hockey. I know people get mad when we go off the pucks, but that's just the nature of the business sometimes. Petey, what do you got?
I got a little parlay. I got the Boston Bruins. I got the, and you could even do Bruins on the puck line plus 140. How about Bruins on the puck line? It's just, you know, be careful out there, but you're, you know, I think this is very likely to hit. You have the Bruins on the puck line. You have Maple Leafs either outright or on the puck line, plus 180 if you want to go on the puck line against the Flames, who quietly have been one of the worst teams in the NHL over the past 2-3 weeks of the season. The Sutter thing just not really working out. And then the Zags. So, like, the Zags, the Maple Leafs, and the Boston Bruins. I think I have a good feeling about each of those individual things. I don't throw parlay ideas out there too often, but that's something that I would feel pretty comfortable about just looking at it at the surface.
Okay. Very nice job, boys. Way to be creative. I just think the Zags are going to win the game. So we'll take the Zags and we'll ride with Petey too. It's either Boston. And I did like Toronto as well. And you know what? I'm not going to go there.
St. Louis tonight. I like St. Louis tonight. They need news or something. They need this guy's back or something, and then they'll win the game. Without news, I won't bet it. But if there's news later, I would take St. Louis.
That's where I was going to go, actually. I think, you know, because you're getting value. I mean, they were minus 110, and now all of a sudden Vegas has shifted to minus 140, St. Louis plus 120. It's not a bad pick. That's where I was going to go, but I said, you know what? I just don't want to deal with the stress tonight with the hockey. So steer clear. James, give me some master's thoughts here, and then we'll really wrap it up, but be quick about it, because people don't understand what the tournament is. They don't understand how powerful and important the Masters tournament is, but maybe we could teach them, James, and you're the golf guy. You are the golf aficionado here on the program. Who do you like?
A lot of people are going to be betting Spieth coming off of his win yesterday. And I think that he always plays well, regardless of where his game is at Augusta. So, you know, if you're in a pool where you're picking, you know, a lot of guys to perform well, I would definitely look Jordan Spieth, like his alma mater, making a run in the tournament. I like Patrick Cantlay, who's a former UCLA product. He's a world beater. This kid is going to be a multiple major winner, and I love his game. It suits Augusta really well. Paul Casey drives the ball well, so if he's driving the ball, if he can putt, he's always going to be up there right now. And Cameron Smith, Australian, has really come on the last handful of years, put some good performances in at Augusta. So those would be my four guys right now who I'm really looking at betting would be Spieth, just because his game is finally back and he always plays well at Augusta. And then I like Cantlay, Smith, and Paul Casey.
Okay, very nice. Well, I'm going to take Hideki Matsuyama, at a plus number. I'm going to put like $300 on Matsuyama to win 14,000, folks. Okay, so that's what we're going to do. And I'm going to put one play, and that's it. I think he has a chance. I like the way he plays, and he's due, right? This guy is due at some point. So let's cash the 14 grand, and we'll have a good time. And then just a shout out to my pal, our pal, Michael Lieboff. He wrote a nice little article on the Masters Action Sports Network. Check it out. Michael Lieboff will get you on to talk some pucks soon. Petey,
One last thing. Closing thought. We picked up, me and Robbie, Jonas Johansson over the weekend, the backup for the Avalanche. He won a big game. The Blues brought it in that game. The Blues' lives are on the line. The guy came in and boosted his confidence a little bit. I just think back to there was some Buffalo reporter said he was the worst goalie that he watched in the past 20 years covering the team. Good on Jonas Johansson for going in there. I think he has some fantasy value the rest of the way in a deep league as a third or fourth goalie for his spot starts for the best team in the NHL. So I was kind of happy to see Jonas Johansson get on the right track with his career for the Avs over the weekend.
And don't be like me where, you know, your team has done well all season and you wait to make these moves. You're hesitant to change things up. Now I'm sliding in the standings, and that's why I was texting James at 10:30 last night about picking up Gustav Forsling, because I need a hope and a prayer right now to make it through the playoffs here.
I like it. Thanks for coming on, buddy, James. Appreciate it. Follow him at WaiverWire James.
Always, guys, thanks for having me. And I will definitely see you guys next week when we're back.
Thank you. At WaiverWire James on Twitter. Thank you. And we will be back Wednesday.